for the Richmond Art Museum in Richmond, Indiana. I'm Kate Jetmore. Today I'm joined by artist Aaron Pickens. Welcome, Aaron.
Hello.
Last year, you won Best of Show at the Richmond Art Museum's annual exhibition. Tell us a little bit about the piece you created for that show.
So the title of the painting is called Locomotive. Mm-hmm. And in a weird way, it was inspired by the East Palestine train derailment, East Palestine, Ohio, mm-hmm. where I think it was Norfolk Southern had a train that derailed. And I think due to discussion, they ended up kind of intentionally blowing up the train, which released a huge toxic plume of gas kind of within the area. And ultimately, it kind of poisoned the groundwater and actually a lot of the residents within both Ohio and in Pennsylvania. And as big business goes, you know, the people, the residents of the town don't really have much power, and there's still ongoing litigation on trying to get, you know, financial costs, reimbursement, because, I mean, these people's lives were, you know, somewhat decimated, whether due to health reasons or even the loss of their the property value for their homes, because people don't want to move to that area. So, I mean, my body of work that I've been kind of developing is, it's called Capture the Flag. And it's kind of a critiquing the cozy relationship between big business and government and governing agencies. And so this kind of topic is, I would say it's difficult. It's not necessarily the most uplifting things to talk about. But what I've been doing for the longest time, maybe since like 2014, is I've been using toys that have this sort of playful, innocent characteristic to address some of these really difficult topics. My thought is by having something that is lighthearted, that people might just look at the painting and like, oh, this is kind of fun. But then if they take a longer look at the work, they might start to put some pieces together and understand, well, the issue that I'm really trying to explore. So it's a way of using this innocence of the imagery, things associated with playtime, as a way of disarming the viewer to maybe look a little bit deeper into, you know, the content that I'm addressing.
Right. That is really interesting. And it actually, what comes up for me as I'm hearing you talk about it is also a sense of familiarity. So if the toy, you know, whether toys in general or the specific toy that you're using in a given piece is something that we had as a kid or we cherished as a kid or coveted at a friend's house, that is a really, really powerful way in. What kind of feedback are you receiving from your viewers in this body of work that you've referred to?
Well, it ranges. Sometimes people will get the content right away. Some people might just look at it and like, oh, I had these toys as a kid. So there's a nostalgic factor. I will mention that I'm selective on what I include in terms of the toys, because I don't want the nostalgia factor to be so strong that they're only connecting with this really identifiable toy, and that becomes the sole conversation about the work. So I usually try to find like almost generic non-name brand toys to serve as the vehicle to communicate these ideas. But yeah, sometimes it's a range. People might just look at it like, oh, that's kind of fun and playful. And then other people are like, oh, okay, that's there's some heaviness to it. I have another painting that's in a very similar manner where it's predominantly like a white background, but I have all of these like Native American figurines and cowboys kind of and army figurines that are arranged in a circle, and they're all pointing guns or you know, different firearms at each other. And it's called peer review. And so it's playful, but then it's also, okay, are you critiquing academia, which there's a bit of that, the peer review process for medical journals and scientific studies, there's a bit of that. So you know, I think with that particular, this recent series, I'm trying to be cognizant of not having the objects overwhelm the message, mm-hmm. such as it being nostalgic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's just go back for a second to the piece that you created for last year's show at the Richmond Art Museum. So you told us kind of the broader scope, what you were going for when it came to the subject matter. Can you describe visually what the piece is like?
Oh, yeah. So I have a wooden, like, train toy set that's going around in a kind of around the outside. It's in a circular pattern. Now, those wooden pieces, they kind of connect together, but I've intentionally left two sections kind of both on the right and the left where they are disconnected to kind of showcase the train derailment. Mm-hmm. In the center of the painting is, I just cut up some cloth, like some blue cloth to kind of represent a pond. Mm-hmm. And then there's the I think it's like a little fishing game, a mechanical fishing game that kids have. Mm-hmm. And I arranged those fish also in a circular pattern. And they're all kind of like, you can view them from like an aerial point of view and it looks like they're kind of gasping for air. Mm. And then in the center of it, there's a duck that's kind of upside down. And what I wanted to suggest is there was a lot of die off from the train derailment poisoning the groundwater. And so there was, you know, a bunch of wildlife succumbed to, you know, these toxins that were in the water supply. And so I wanted to showcase that, well, these fish, they look playful, but they're actually in a gesture of them kind of trying to grasp for air. And then with the duck upside down, it's like, I didn't want it to be so obvious. I was thinking about maybe changing the eyes of the duck to being X's, kind of like the classic cartoons, but I just kind of left it as is. I thought it was subtle enough that it might be indicative that, well, the duck has also passed. Mm-hmm. And then I think I have around the outside, there's like a plastic frog that you can press down on the back of it and it'll kind of leap.
Right.
That's kind of turned upside down. And there's also barrels, like oil barrels from like an army set that I've also located near the sections where the train has, you know, the track has been disconnected to kind of showcase why at this point, you know, there's these things that are spilling over. So a lot of plastic, a lot of like small like wooden objects. But one of the things I tried to do with this work and the ones that are in this series is I wanted it at a distance to have this kind of larger almost shape. It's a circular, it's a circle within a, you know, square composition. And I just liked it as a design element where almost at a distance it could look kind of like an abstract design. Mm-hmm. But then you get up close to it and you see all the information. Mm-hmm. So what I do, maybe to give a little backstory with my process, I set up an arrangement kind of in my studio. Then I take a photograph of it. And then after I've tweaked the photograph in Photoshop, then I'll translate that image with oil paint.
Okay.
And so this particular painting took me, well, I did like an initial pass that took me maybe like 2 days. But then during my summer breaks, I can spend a long time really kind of fine tuning and working through these types of studio-based works. And so it was probably about a month of at least 8-hour days of really, you know, chipping away at refining this painting.
Oh, thank you so much for describing that. It really gives a strong visual. And I'd love it if you could walk us through the experience of participating in the annual exhibition. What are the various steps that you took and that any artist would need to take if he or she wanted to compete in a juried show like this one?
So, I mean, I think first and foremost, you need to have artwork. And then, so you need to make stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a wide range of what can get into a juried exhibition. I think finding opportunities that maybe there's a sensibility that is in alignment with the work that you produce. So maybe even kind of keeping that in mind. I'm not going to probably apply to an abstract exhibition or something like that. Mm-hmm. But after you have work, well, you should also keep in mind, is the work distinctly your own? Mm-hmm. Does it seem like you have your own creative voice that you want to put out there? Or does it look like something else that already exists, which, I mean, everything's been done before in some ways, but does there still seem like there's some sort of originality mm-hmm. with what you're bringing to the table? And I think when it comes to juried exhibitions, you know, that helps.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've seen a lot of, you know, I love doing landscape painting. I love doing plein air painting, mm-hmm. but we've seen so many paintings of barns. Nothing wrong with that. I love painting barns. But you also have to keep in mind, is there something new that you're doing with that particular subject matter mm-hmm. that warrants inclusion into a show? So after you feel like you have some work that you want to exhibit, I'm kind of a stickler about this, but I want the documentation of my artwork to be as truthful to what I produced. Mm. So you need good quality photo documentation. Mm-hmm. However you need to get that, you know, there's a bunch of different ways of doing that. So I'll take photographs of my own work. I'll tweak them in Photoshop so that it's as accurate of a representation of my work. And then, you know, when it comes to the different opportunities, each show might have different specifications on how you should submit their work. And you just kind of go through that process. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you don't know if you're going to get in. You may not. I mean, that's just the life of being an artist,
right.
Is you have to take that risk. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, getting a rejection. I tell my students all the time, it's like, you know, it comes with the territory.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that your work is lesser, but it just means maybe this time there wasn't either enough space or maybe it just wasn't the right general audience for this opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many juried shows you submit your own work to in a given year, but are you able to lead us through the specific process that you went through when it comes to the Richmond Art Museum?
Yeah. So, I mean, last year was the first year that they used an online submission process.
Mm-hmm.
All the years before that, the Richmond Art Museum would have like a weekend where you would drop off your work and they would jury it then to see if you were included or not.
Mm-hmm.
So 2024, they used a new online platform called ShowSubmit. There's a few other competitors out there that do something similar. You make a portfolio, you upload your digital images, you put the right information in there,
mm-hmm.
such as, you know, the dimensions, how much you would want to sell the work for, you know, the year it was created, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used that ShowSubmit this past year to apply for the Richmond Art Museum's annual exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's pretty straightforward. I think the hardest part is getting a nice quality photograph of your artwork mm-hmm. that's really representative of what you created.
Right. It's so interesting and kind of full circle to hear you talk about your creative process, which includes, you know, kind of creating the piece, which is almost a still life, I would say, and then taking a photo
yep.
of that arrangement of objects, then doing the painting, and now you're talking about taking a photo of the painting. So it's a really interesting process.
Yeah.
Why do you think, I mean, what's your opinion, Aaron, about why artists should make it a priority to enter juried shows? Why is that an important part of an artist's life?
I mean, there's so many different reasons on why being a part of juried exhibitions is important. I think you want to be in dialogue with other artists.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, going to a juried exhibition, I think it tells a story of that time and place. Mm. You know, Richmond Arch Museum is, you know, people from Ohio and Indiana can submit to this exhibition. And I think it has a preference for maybe more representational, like painting, mm-hmm. or representational work based off of the history of the museum. So I think it's a nice snapshot of what's occurring in Ohio and Indiana at this given point in time. Mm-hmm. And so you can see, well, what are maybe some current trends? What are people kind of exploring? So there's a beautiful dialogue amongst the art itself that's occurring, which I think is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, you're able to kind of see what are other people doing. So even in your own practice, it's like, oh, I'm not familiar with this artist. I love what they're doing. So yeah. It puts them on your radar. Mm-hmm. I tell my students all the time, you know, you need to look. You need to be familiar with what else is being produced out there. Not mm-hmm. saying that you want to copy their work or avoid it, but if you're trying to solve a creative problem, there might be answers from someone else. Mm-hmm. That could inform what you're doing. So the more that you kind of build this visual library, you can kind of recall it when you're in the process of making a piece. Mm-hmm. I actually had 4 students apply to the Richmond Art Museum this year. And luckily, 2 students got in the amateur division, mm-hmm. which is awesome. And so for them, I think it can be reaffirming on what they're doing has merit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an acknowledgement of, hey, this is, you know, you're doing something unique here. You're doing it at a very high level. And, you know, I think that's something that should be acknowledged. They get a lot of feedback from the faculty members at the school. And so I think sometimes they can dismiss it potentially, just because it's like, well, you know who I am. You're just giving me praise because right. you want to encourage me. Having that validation from, you know, a set of jurors outside of our own little insulated environment, I think it's motivating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. And I guess I'd just like to wrap up by asking you what it meant to you to win Best in Show last year.
I mean, I can't really put it into words. It was life-changing, to say the least. I mean, I've been very fortunate. I've gotten a number of accolades throughout my career, but there was something very different about this particular event. I think because it was a larger, you know, scope in terms of who could enter into it. It was a regional competition. And like, I mean, even for myself, I tell my students this, you know, getting validation, you know, if you get into a show, that's always great to just see your work in a museum. But then to have that, I mean, it's the icing on the cake where you just receive an award, and it could even just be, you know, hey, you got a merit award, but then to receive top prize. I mean, I was blown away. Mm. I think there wasn't many photos of that day or me actually getting that award because I was crying like crazy. Mm-hmm. Just because I was, you know, you can never expect that. And then in addition to winning Best of Show, the museum also purchased the painting. So, you know, to have that now in the permanent collection of the Richmond Art Museum was, wow. You know, it's just no words.
Yeah.
You know, just completely grateful. And then, you know, of course the acknowledgement was great, but then also the financial, you know, award that came along with it. I mean, it, you know, life-changing once again, to say the least. I mean, some medical reasons going on with me and my wife, and having that influx of cash really helped, you know, correct maybe a long-term chronic health issue.
Wow.
So, I mean, it seemed like, you know, the heavens spoke or the universe spoke.
Aaron, thank you so much for joining me today and for sharing in such an open and generous way. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
For the Richmond Art Museum, this is Kate Jetmore.